Because I guess every time that I've had the opportunity on a Sunday morning to share, I've had anywhere from 30 days to 60 days knowing that that was coming up. And so, obviously, Thursday night there was no chance. And Friday night, Saturday, I was praying to God, like, so what should I share? And I still just didn't feel like I knew exactly what he had. And I spent some time, Marianne took the kids yesterday to go garage sailing a little bit. And so I was sitting on the front porch with the breeze blowing and praying and fell asleep. And I thought, well, you know what, I kind of felt like I should go back through my quiet time journal that I've had and just look at some of the things in there. And it kind of, God is always faithful. It's kind of the same thing. It's not anything. It's hard to describe. It's not through anything that we do. And the things that I found really tie back a lot to what Carlton shared this morning. And it kind of tied into, Marianne had a conversation with a person on Friday that was kind of disturbing. This person is a Christian. And just found something, kind of stumbled upon something that we didn't know about this person or persons. And don't take any of this wrong. It's not a judgmental type of thing. But it kind of got my thoughts really going as to what is important. And it kind of ties back to what I talked about 2 weeks ago on Sunday and seeking God and how it's so easy for us to get our priorities mixed up. And this particular individual is, I'm fairly certain, a Christian, but this person is definitely under the influence of the world. And there's been a lot of challenges. And, a day like today, it can be very easy to get depressed is not the right word, but, thinking, nobody's coming. We've had quite a few visitors that haven't come back a second time. And so I started thinking a lot about that, a lot of the challenges that we face as a church. And actually, a lot of the challenges and a lot of the blessings that tie together. And when I was going back through my quiet time notes, some of the way back in the early part of my book, which I think probably goes back to, I didn't date them, probably started dating them, I think back to probably about this time last year. I was reading a book called Money, Possessions, and Eternity by Randy Alcorn. And had some questions in there which I think tie back to a lot of the things that we're going through. And then a lot of things that I want to share today. And the questions that... And actually, I think he got the questions from Tozer that I mentioned before. But these were the four questions that I had written down in my outline. And so, like I said, when I mentioned the individual from Friday, I didn't feel any judgment on this person at all. I just know, and I've shared that probably most of my adult life was spent with the wrong focus as well, even though I was a Christian. So I know I was saved, but I was missing out on a lot of things that God has for us. So these questions at the time struck me, and they still do today because it's something we all have to pay careful attention to. These four questions that he had written were, what do you value most? What would you most hate to lose? What do your thoughts turn to most frequently when you are free to think about what you want? And what affords you the most pleasure? And that's pretty fairly powerful questions if you really start thinking through Christian life, things that are valuable. And actually, as I thought about them yesterday, probably something I should write down and just put on my work cubicle so that I think about these things every day. Is that what do I value the most? What would I most hate to lose? What do I think about when I have the free time to just think? And then what affords me the most pleasure? And I've seen a lot of changes in my life, and it's not ties back to what Carlton was saying, because it's not about works. It's not about something that we do. And it's very hard to describe because it's a It's about that relationship with God. And it's about submitting our lives and turning our lives over to God. And I think what drove me from that situation with that individual on Friday was that I was thinking of how blessed we are to be challenged by where our church is right now. And there's a lot of challenges that go with how we've chosen to structure our church, how we our focus, because it is challenging. The Christian life is challenging. And it's challenging not because of the effort required, but because of the submission required. That if we do get tired, that's why I kind of like Gerda Carlson said, because it ties in so closely, that if we're getting tired, if we're getting worn out, then it's probably because we're not submitted to God, that we're trying to do things on our own strength. And we're not having, I'm not saying, I mean, we're maybe having quiet time, but maybe our focus is wrong, and it ties back to the things that we've seen in 1 Corinthians, and where is it self-focused? It's just things for us to reflect upon. And these are, as I was thinking through some of the challenges that we have in our church, is that, you know, we're challenged not to just make Sunday morning the culmination of our experience with God. So the challenge is that Sunday morning is important because we come together as a body. But Sunday morning shouldn't be the height of our time with God during the week. It should just be one more step in the constant journey that we have in committing our lives and being quiet time and spending time every week with God. We're challenged as a church body to continue to reckon it true that we are dead to sin. That we don't have to live the life that we lived before we were Christians, or sometimes when we were Christians. That, I mean, we're challenged to reckon it true. It's through faith that we reckon those things true. We're challenged to not just accept Jesus' blood atonement as the end of our relationship with God. Because we can do that. Jesus, His death on that cross, and we talked about this Thursday night at Confirmations, His death on the cross tore that veil that separated us from God. So now we have access to God. We have the key to spending time with God, but that's not the end of it. We can make it that way if we're not careful, but now we have the key, we have that access. The height of what God wants from us is to turn that key and come in. And to do it constantly, and to be in that perfect relationship with Him. So we're challenged there. We're challenged, certainly on a day like today, to not accept the world standard for what makes a church body. There are hundreds of churches, maybe thousands around this country, that are doing things their own way. And our focus has been to seek God's way in everything that we do. So by a worldly perspective, and the lack of people here today is certainly a sign that the world would look at and say, well, it's not being very effective. And I think the key thing there is that probably in a lot of those churches that are doing things their own way, these types of challenges are not being thrown out there. And if they're being thrown out there, people are able to walk away from the challenges, because there's nobody that has a personal relationship with them. There's nobody to spur them on and talk about. Nobody to share with them to develop each other. Because a lot of times it's because they choose that. In a lot bigger church, you can go into the back. I know it's well from experience. You can hang out in the back and feel pretty good. You can go home and okay. And then come back and do it again that next week without ever really making any changes. That leads us to another challenge, is that we're challenged here to wait on God for His timing and church growth, His timing and the development of all of us, because it's not generally an overnight change. It takes time for people to develop. There are all levels of maturity, and so we're challenged to wait on God, because a lot of times we want it to happen overnight. And I remember a guy who participated in our Sunday night Bible study a while ago, talking to Steve one night. He said, well, you know, it's just, you can say all these things and you have all this knowledge and you have all this information, and I just don't have that. So I can't live the life that you live every day. And the thing about it is that that guy could have all that, but he makes a personal choice each and every day to have or not have that. And we all do that. Through quiet time, through study, through prayer, all of that can be available to each and every one of us. And like I said, we make that choice. It's through, do we spend time? Are we pursuing what God has for us? And so here at this church, we're definitely challenged to not just accept the fact that we're saved and sit there. And it's certainly what Paul writes about in Romans. We don't have to accept just that, although that's a huge gift. But we can learn so much more. And there's probably... probably lots of other challenges out there that each one of us face in the relationships here. Because when you have a church body this small and this close, it's not as easy to come on a Sunday morning and just sit in the back and scoot out if you know, you've had a fight with your spouse or you just had a rough week. Those types of things are more evident. Not that it's impossible to scoot by with that, but it's harder. And one of the things that definitely has... or that's important, I think, is, and that all that I'm going to tie all this into really where I went next in my quiet time is that I spent a few, maybe a month or so, reading through the book of Jeremiah. And I hadn't really spent a considerable amount of time studying and looking at the prophets. And so I'm going to kind of talk about the book of Jeremiah, and we're going to, if you can go there, we're going to turn to a bunch of verses. And just as a little background, for everybody to remember that now Jeremiah, when he wrote this, he was a prophet during the reign of the last four kings of Judah, and a period of about 625 BC to sometime after 586 BC. Now for background for Judah, if you remember that after the reign of King Solomon, the nation of Israel was split into two kingdoms, the northern kingdom, which was 10 tribes in the northern kingdom, then a southern kingdom, which were the tribes of Judah and the tribe of Benjamin. And so, by the time Jeremiah came on the scene as a prophet, and God appointed him as a prophet, the northern kingdom had turned away from God. They turned their back on God. They spent time worshiping other gods and falling away from God. And as a result, God had pronounced a judgment on the northern kingdom called Israel. And they had been attacked and captured by the Assyrians and been taken away to Assyria and various other places to never, the northern kingdoms never returned to the promised land in any organized fashion. Individuals have returned, but the northern kingdoms were split apart as a result of God's judgment and sent away. So the two southern king, or the southern kingdom, Judah, tribes of Judah and Benjamin at this time, were on that same path as the northern kingdom. And God sent Jeremiah, and there were other prophets at the time, but Jeremiah, we're going to read about here, to talk to the people, to share with them. And in Jeremiah, it talks about the fact that Jeremiah was selected by God for this specific purpose before he was even born. Once again, it's powerful that God chooses things for us to do, not in our own strength, but before we're ever born, knowing that He has things for us to do in obedience to Him and in His strength. And I'm going to go through some verses here. The other thing I guess before we get into that real quick is that in reading the prophets, one thing that definitely has stood out to me is that the prophets don't pull any punches with the people. And you can think of that as, well, okay, these guys were pretty hard, but where are their words coming from? They're coming from God. So God doesn't pull any punches when he's trying to share things. And some of the verses we're going to read in here today are pretty strong worded. And I think we can be lucky that we have Steve as our lead shepherd here, because some of the things, you know, that we talk about, we don't shy away from those challenges as a church body, that they're out there, that we take those on, recognizing that they're from God. And if we spend, we could certainly tone things down, we could certainly make things less challenging, but that's not the example that God gives us in the Bible. Jesus was challenging. When he was teaching, he didn't tone things down either. And you do it in love, and that's always the background. If you're challenging and it's hard words and there's not love there, then that's obvious and that's not the right way to do it. But so what I want to do is start in Jeremiah. I'm going to start in chapter 1, verse 16, and just read some verses here that give a picture of the problems in Judah. Some things that Jeremiah gives as a picture of what was happening with the people in that day. And then there's a lot of, as I read through it, there's a lot of things there that I think have applicability to us in our day as well. So let's go to Jeremiah 1, chapter 16. I'm sorry, chapter 1, verse 16. And then the focus there was really on the second sentence in that verse. But
now declare my judgments against them for all their evil and forsaking me. They have made offerings to other gods and worship the works of their own hands.
Okay, the thing that struck me about that verse is God is saying that he's going to declare judgments against people for evil. Once again, obviously, because they made offerings to other gods. So they're not focusing God on God. But then second, they worship the works of their own hands. And certainly that is a huge temptation for us today, for people today. Things of work, all the things that we can think of that can take higher priority than God in our lives, the works of our own hands. There's a lot of things that can tie back into that. Go to Jeremiah chapter 2, verse 5.
The Lord says, what fault did your fathers find in me that they strayed so far from me? They followed worthless idols and became worthless themselves.
Okay, so what wrong did your fathers find in me that they went far from me and went after worthlessness and became worthless? So God is telling us in very plain words right there that, I mean, he's asking a question. Why? What fault was there in God? And it's the same thing we should be asking ourselves. Why would we choose anything other than God? Anything other than God is worthlessness. And the Bible tells us that. It's going to lead us to trouble. It's going to lead us to a lack of fulfillment in life. And so I thought that was a great verse there. Let's go to also in chapter 2, verses 11 and 13.
Has a nation ever changed its gods if they are not gods at all? My people have committed two sins. They have forsaken me, the spring of living water, and have dug their own cisterns, broken cisterns that cannot hold water.
Okay, so once again, he's talking about judgment, saying, has a nation changed its gods even though they are no gods? So there's many nations out there who are focused on a god that's not a god. And we sort of talked about that on Sunday night. Just gods with a little g. We can put whatever we want in control of our lives. We can even put ourselves there. But we're not God. There's only one God. And we're exchanging the glory of God for things that don't profit. And then it says the people had committed two evils. They had forsaken God, the fountain of living waters. And then they'd hewed out cisterns for themselves, broken cisterns that can hold no water. And I think that ties back to what Carlton mentioned this morning. If we are working, if we are hacking out cisterns for ourselves, not through God's power, then they're broken and they can't hold any water. And that's why if we're feeling those struggles, it's because we're probably not relying on God. We're trying to do things under our own power. And he's telling us right there that it's broken, that it's not going to be worthwhile. So we have to rely upon him. Let's go to Jeremiah 4:22.
My people are fools. They do not know me. They are senseless children. They have no understanding. They are skilled in doing evil. They know not how to do good.
So once again, at the worst point, when we turn away from God, then we become fools to the point where that God says they're like stupid children with no understanding. They're wise in doing evil, but they don't know how to do good. Once again, that's because they're not having that relationship with God. Because you can't do good through your own self. But they're wise in doing evil, so that's their strength. And that's pretty strong words. Let's go to Jeremiah 5:7.
How shall I pardon you for this? Your children have forsaken me and sworn by those that are not gods, when I had fed them to the bull. Then they committed adultery and assembled themselves by troops in the harlots' houses.
Okay, so once again here, God is talking about, he's passing through Jeremiah, how can he pardon the people? Because the children, the people of Judah, had forsaken him and sworn by those who were no gods. So once again, they're putting their faith in powers and idols and things that are not God. And I was going to talk about the prophets. When God spoke to the prophets, he didn't mince words. He said it was like a relationship, because he talks about the church. There's always, God talks about that as the bride and as the bridegroom, and the people of Israel as his selected people, that even when he had fed them to the full, he provided their every need, then they committed adultery in their hearts as they went away from God. So once again, it's strong words, words that we can listen to today, because we don't want that to happen, obviously, here. That God wants us to have that relationship with him. And when we're not, when we are focused on the world, when we're not paying attention to what God has for us, when we're not submitted to him, then it is as if we're committing adultery. We are not being filled to the full with what God has for us. Okay, let's go to Jeremiah 7:28.
Therefore say to them, this is the nation that has not obeyed the Lord its God or responded to correction. Truth has perished, it has vanished from their lips.
Okay, so here God is telling Jeremiah to go and speak these words, but then he's telling them that the people are going to turn away still. And we see there, the thing that I think that struck me about that was that they did not accept discipline. The truth had perished, it was cut off from their lips. And the Bible talks about over and over, and we saw it right there when Carlton was reading those verses in John in chapter 15, where the vine, that God prunes those who bear fruit and he cuts those away that don't. That's God's discipline. He is going to prune us and he's going to discipline us. And the Bible is replete with verses that talk about a wise man is okay with discipline, because when God disciplines us, it's for correction, it's for our benefit. And he's trying to do things, he's always doing things for us in order to make our lives more full, more complete, not just for the heck of it. He doesn't give us restrictions just to give us restrictions. He gives us those things because they will improve our lives and it will improve our relationship with God. Then let's go to last verse on this is Jeremiah 17:5.
Thus says the Lord, cursed is the man who trusts in man and makes flesh his strength, whose heart turns away from the Lord.
And I think that's just a powerful example, that if we're trusting in flesh, if we're trusting in our own strength, if we're trusting in the things of the world, then we're cursed. And if our hearts turn away from God, obviously that's the wrong thing. So that gives us, I think all those verses tied in, and they just really stood out to me when I went through reading Jeremiah, giving a picture of what was happening there, and I think a picture of what certainly happens even now sometimes in my life when I'm not focused on God and not submitted. Now the other thing that struck me over and over again, and we're going to go to some verses here, was the responsibility. We've seen here the people made choices. Those really talked about the attitude or the hearts of the people. They'd made their individual choices to follow the world, to rely on their own strength. But also what struck me many times going through Jeremiah was discussion of shepherds and the fact that the leadership, the spiritual leadership of the people of Judah, the southern kingdom, had failed them. And so I want to go through some verses. Let's go back to Jeremiah chapter 2, verse 8.
The priests did not ask, where is the Lord? Those who deal with the law did not know me. The leaders rebelled against me. The prophets prophesied by Baal, following worthless idols.
Okay, so this just talked about, here they were going through all these things in their leadership. Instead of seeking after God, the priests, their leaders, didn't say, where is the Lord? They didn't seek after him. those who handled the law did not know me, so they weren't seeking after God, they weren't following God. The shepherds transgressed against God, and the prophets prophesied by Baal, another god, and then went after things that did, or went after things that do not profit. Once again, now the people had made these choices, but their leadership, instead of making, of spurring them on to do the right things, instead of challenging them to do the things that God has for correction, they went along with the people. Let's go to Jeremiah 10:21.
The shepherds have become dull-hearted and have not sought the Lord. Therefore, they shall not prosper, and all their flocks shall be scattered.
Okay, dull-hearted, the English Standard Version says, for the shepherds are stupid and do not inquire of the Lord. Therefore, they have not prospered, and all their flock is scattered. Obviously, I mean, these two verses just scream to me that we have to be seeking the Lord, that and inquiring of the Lord and waiting on the Lord, those are the challenges that we face in God's timing. But we absolutely can't try and do it our own way. We can't do it the way the world has to do it, but we have to wait. Now, we all have, all of us in one way or another, have responsibilities as shepherds. There are shepherds in the church, but there are shepherds in the family. Each one of us men here have a responsibility in our family. Each woman, a responsibility to our children, to our friends. We all have those responsibilities. And so it's just important that we know and that we focus on doing things the way God has them and not looking at the way the world does things. Let's go to Jeremiah 12:10-11.
Many shepherds will ruin my vineyard and trample down my field. They will turn my pleasant field into a desolate wasteland. It will be made a wasteland, parched and desolate before me. The whole land will be laid waste because there is no one who cares.
Okay, so once again, talking about the failure of the shepherds and as a result, the desolation that came upon the people. Then a couple more. Jeremiah 23, verses 1 and 2.
Woe to the shepherds who are destroying and scattering the sheep of my pasture, declares the Lord. Therefore, this is what the Lord, the God of Israel, says to the shepherds who tend my people. Because you have scattered my flock and driven them away and have not bestowed care on them, I will bestow punishment on you for the evil you have done, declares the Lord.
Okay, so this is obviously a very powerful verse that, I mean, nobody with a shepherd's responsibility wants to hear God say, I will attend to you for your evil deeds. That there's a, we have a responsibility, and God takes it incredibly seriously, feeding and caring for His sheep. And then Jeremiah 25:34-35.
Weep and wail, you shepherds! Roll in the dust, you leaders of the flock, for your time to be slaughtered has come. You will fall and be shattered like fine pottery. The shepherds will have nowhere to flee, the leaders of the flock no place to escape.
And so once again, just ultimately, when shepherds have turned away from God, when they lead people away, obviously this wouldn't apply to now, to a Christian, but there's still going to be an accountability that God has for shepherds and for our responsibilities there. And I think that just stood out to me, like I mentioned, so much reading through Jeremiah, that leadership is important, and that waiting and leadership the right way is important. That we can always feel the pressure to do things the world's way, but that God is calling us to do things His way. And we have to obviously be careful that we're not making purposeful choices in order to make it appear like we're doing something to make us appear special. Well, we're not going to do something because it's more like a work, or it's more like we're choosing to do something or to not do something just out of, not out of God's leading, but just because of our own leading. I'm not phrasing that very well. But choosing to not do things, not because it's what God has for us, but because we want to try and make a point, or because we want to not advertise or whatever it happens to be, that we have to be careful that we are following God's guidance and what He gives us, and that we're doing it for His purposes, both doing and not doing. Now, the other thing that stood out in Jeremiah, and there's a boatload of stuff in Jeremiah that none of this even touches. But the thing that stood out also is that, despite of all this, that God is sharing with Jeremiah, He knows the people are going to turn away, and that they're going to face judgment, which is they're going to be conquered. But God's love shines, the shepherd, His love for us shines through all of this, and the fact that He's there, He's waiting with open arms. Let's go back to Jeremiah chapter 3, verses 13 through 15.
When we acknowledge your guilt, that you rebelled against the Lord your God, and scattered your favors among the foremost under every green tree, and that you have not obeyed my voice, declares the Lord. Return, O faithless children, declares the Lord, for I am your master. I will take you, one from a city, two from a family, and I will bring you to Zion.
And then 15 also calls.
And I will give you shepherds after my own heart, who will feed you with knowledge and understanding.
This one, I think, was probably one of my favorites from going through there. Was that all we have to do is acknowledge our guilt and our rebellion, and then we can come right back to God. And then the following there is that He will give you shepherds after His own heart that would feed us with knowledge and understanding. That when we turn back to God, He's going to provide leaders, He's going to provide shepherds after His own heart. Let's go to Jeremiah 7, 5 through 7.
If you really change your ways and your actions and deal with each other justly, if you do not oppress the alien, the fatherless, or the widow, and do not shed innocent blood in this place, if you do not follow other gods to your own harm, then I will let you live in this place in the land I gave your forefathers forever and ever.
So once again here, God is telling them if they will just turn back to Him, then they can dwell in the land that He gave them forever. It's the same with us, that we can dwell in that relationship with Him daily and forever, but we have to rely upon Him and His strength and not go there. In verse 6 it says, do not go after other gods to your own harm. Once again, that we get so fooled by the world into thinking that these other things are of value, but it really only harms us, and God is looking out for our good. Now Jeremiah 10 verse 7 and then 11 and 12.
Who would not fear you, O King of nations? For this is your rightful due. For among all the wise men of the nations and in their kingdoms, there is none like you. But the Lord is the true God. He is the living God and the everlasting King. At His wrath, the earth will tremble, and the nations will not be able to abide His indignation. Thus you shall say to them, the gods that have not made the heavens and the earth shall perish from the earth and from under these heavens.
And then 12 also.
He has made the earth by His power. He has established the world by His wisdom and has stretched out the heavens at His discretion.
And then those struck me as just really powerful verses about God, that He's given us instruction in His Word, and He wants us to follow Him, and it is He who made the heavens and the universe. And Jeremiah is just, there's great verses in here that talk about all the nature of God, His omnipotence and His all-powerfulness, His presence everywhere, the omniscience, His all-knowingness. And this just speaks to His power, that He and He alone made the heavens and the earth. And then skip down in the same chapter, verse 10, chapter 10 to verses 23 and 24.
I know, O Lord, that a man's life is not his own. It is not for a man to direct his steps. Correct me, Lord, but only with justice, not in your anger, lest you reduce me to nothing.
So I thought that was something would be a good prayer. That we recognize that the way of man is not in himself, it's in God, and that it is not in us to walk to direct our steps, but God and God alone is going to do that for us. And that we should be praying, ties back to that discipline, to God, the correction, but always in justice, not in His anger. Knowing that who He is and that fear of God comes through in there, that He is the Creator, and that we should recognize that certainly. Now, Jeremiah 17, 7 through 10.
Blessed is the man who trusts in the Lord and whose hope is in the Lord. For he shall be like a tree planted by the water, which spreads out its roots by the river, and will not fear when heat comes. But its leaf will be green and will not be anxious in the year of drought, nor will cease from yielding fruit. The heart is deceitful above all things and desperately wicked. Who can know it? I, the Lord, search the heart. I test the mind, even to give every man according to his ways, according to the fruit of his doings.
So once again there, just that promise that when we put our trust in the Lord, that He is going to take care of our needs, that we can't rely upon our heart, because our heart can be deceitful. It generally leads us back to things of the world, but we have to trust in God and what He's given us. And the last verse is to Jeremiah 29, verses 11 through 14.
For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord, plans to prosper you and not to harm you, plans to give you hope and a future. Then you will call upon me and come and pray to me, and I will listen to you. You will seek me and find me when you seek me with all your heart.
And certainly these are, when I read through that, that's a promise there from God that we definitely want to take hold of. That for God knows the plans He has for us, plans for wholeness and not for evil, to give us a future and a hope. That when we call upon Him and pray to Him, that He will hear us. When we seek Him, we will find Him. When we seek Him with all of our heart. And I think the last part of that verse was back in the seeking God verse. And just, I know for me, it's just reading through Jeremiah, just all of those things tied together, understanding, gave me a much better understanding of God's character, His nature, His love for us, and His forgiveness when we're willing to go back to Him. Unfortunately, the people of Judah didn't listen, and as a result, they were conquered by the Babylonians. They, however, did return after 70 years back to the Promised Land, but faced many other obstacles later. But there's a lot of things in there as far as us and what we can be looking at, things we can be thankful for. We can be thankful for all the challenges that we have, but only if we are relying upon God and we're not trying to make all the corrections and do everything in our own power, because that's just a recipe for struggle and difficulty. But if we're letting God work through us and we're reliant on Him, then we have nothing to fear. Alright, that was kind of... There's so much more there in Jeremiah that we could barely even... There's something like 50-some chapters there. It seemed like every other verse there, I was like, wow. Wow.